Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
This is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Network. I'm sorry, Rainbow Soul Channel of Blake Network. I would like to let people know that the call-in number for tonight is 914-338-0695. And as always, we have a lively chat going on at healingwithdrdaniels.chatango.com. Well, I can see that tonight's topic is one of very high interest, and certainly, in my mind, one of extreme importance, especially for people who are trying to heal naturally. We've heard a lot about alkalinize or die, and I would like to propose something called acidify and live. I know it's a big leap for those of you who've been digesting the phenomenal, and I must really compliment it, marketing information coming out of the natural healing industry. What I want to do is I want to first walk you through the just what is pH, what's the normal range for people, what's the normal range in different parts of our body, and then I want to talk about the medical history of pH manipulation. And I want to bring you right up to the present date with the medical manipulation of pH and the impact it's had on the health of Americans. Then we can take a little sidestep over into the natural field. We're going to talk about maybe alkaline waters. We're going to talk about alkaline drinks, all these attempts to alkalinize the body and what's really helping and what's actually harming, maybe even killing you. Okay, so alkalinize or die. That was the rally cry in the 90s. And I was there. I was in medical practice. And actually, I would say I was just leaving medical practice when that became all the rage, this whole alkalinize thing. Meanwhile, I was sitting in my little medical office in Syracuse, New York, curing people naturally with distilled water. Those of you who are up on such things, distilled water has a pH of 5.5. That's acidic. So I was saying, well, I guess these people must be getting good results with all the alkalinizing stuff. But maybe not. So the thing to look at is what is pH? pH is percent hydrogen ions. And so it's not only percent hydrogen ions, but it's the reciprocal of the percent hydrogen ions. So the higher the percent hydrogen ions, the lower the pH. Now, we can get more technical, you know, the power to the tenth of the negative sign, you drop the negative sign, all sort of stuff, but that's no need to get that deep into it. Point is this. The bigger the pH, the less acid, the more alkaline. The lower the pH, the more acid and the more acidic. So that's what you need to know. Now, what does your body have to say about this? Well, one thing to take a look at is, what is the normal body pH? Well, normal body pH of a human being is between 7.35 and 7.45 in the blood. That's the key, in the blood. So your body works very, very hard at keeping this narrow pH range, which, by the way, is not all that narrow, because each point change in pH represents a 100-fold change in concentration. So what we're looking at here is a basically 0.1 change, so it's a 10-fold change in percent ions. So your body actually maintains a range, 10-fold range in concentration, which, depending on, you know, how you're looking at it, this might be narrow, it might be broad. But the point is, 7.35 to 7.45 is normal. So in other words, if your blood is less than 7.35, it's said to be acidic. If it's more than 7.45, it's said to be too basic or too alkaline. Yes, there is such a thing as too alkaline. In other words, there's an optimal pH for the body. So if you go over 7.45, you're entering an area that's not healthy. If you go below 7.35, you're entering an acidic area that's also not healthy. Okay, so the blood pH is regulated to stay in a narrow range, and every organ in your body gets in on the act to maintain the pH. And every organ has its part to play. And we use fancy words, we doctors do, like homeostatic mechanisms. That means a method that your body uses to keep this pH in the normal range. So you've got the lungs, respiratory system, you've got the urinary system, you've got acid-base balance. This particular reference I got was from the medical literature. So they don't recognize the role of many of the other organs in acid-base balance, but I'll bring them into play here. But the point is this. If this pH range is not maintained, then hormones stop working, and normal body functions stop happening. So in mammals, the normal pH range of arterial blood is actually a little higher, 7.35 to 7.50. And depending on the species, it can vary slightly. But let's just say, for the sake of discussion, we want to be generous, that we're going to let things go up to 7.5. Next question is, what's the highest pH compatible with life? And for this, we have to go to the American Thoracic Journal, and a Journal of Thoracic Surgery, and they report the case of a person with a pH as high, get this, as 8.1 who actually lived. And this has now been established as a new pH level compatible with life. It's called a new life compatible level. This was recently established a couple of years ago. So if you go over 8.10 pH in your blood, you can expect to die. That's a reasonable expectation, and truth of the matter is a lot of folks die sooner. So we've got this situation going on. The body likes a regular pH. So let's take a look. This is the blood. But let's take a look at the rest of the body. You know, maybe we can get some more information here. You have muscles in your body. And what do your muscles do? They contract. They move your bones. They move, in my case, move my mouth so I can talk to you. The normal resting pH, a resting muscle cell hasn't done anything yet, 5.99. Clearly acidic, okay? It's less than 7.35, so it's acidic by human standards. So the normal environment in the muscle cell at rest is 5.99. Now, once the muscle starts working, it starts producing waste, lactic acid, bicarb, positive ions, H pluses. In other words, it produces acid. So 5.99 is a normal, healthy muscle cell. It may not be obvious to you, but if the pH goes higher than that, let's say the pH in the muscle cell goes to 6.5 or, heaven forbid, 7, then the enzymes causing the contraction of your muscles are not going to work as well, and you're going to experience something called fatigue, tiredness, or weakness. So let's take a look at your kidneys. What's the kidney pH? Well, kidneys are very, very interesting because the kidneys produce urine. And so the question is, I've always wondered, is what's a normal pH for the urine? And I'd like to say, I've been testing urine pHs for longer than I care to admit, and I've always gotten acidic urine pHs that I've measured, whether the person is healthy or not. But let's just take a look at urine pH. So urine pH has a range of 4.5 to 8. Notice that top number, 8. Doesn't go any higher than that, at least, again, compatible with life and compatible with any kind of health. So the urine pH is pretty odd because if the urine pH is acid, in other words, lower than 4.5, then the person has acid blood, uncontrolled diabetes, maybe they have that bad diarrhea, starvation, dehydration, or respiratory disease, where carbon dioxide retention occurs. In other words, emphysema or severe asthma attack where the person can't get carbon dioxide out, it stays in, and then the kidneys kick in, and they dump the acid that the lungs should have dumped. Okay? So all the organs work together. If one organ falls down the job, they don't beat up on that organ, another organ steps in and picks up the load. That's just the way it works. So lungs and kidneys are actually highly hooked up together. So what about alkaline? What happens if you have alkaline urine? Well, it means you're intoxicated with drugs like salicylates. It means you have, get this, chronic renal failure. Yes, chronic renal failure, alkaline urine. So when the urine, when the kidney environment is alkaline, the kidneys cannot remove toxins from the blood like they're supposed to, and you have chronic renal failure. Okay? This is not trivial. Or you might have a respiratory disease that involves hyperventilation. That means breathing really fast, breathing a lot. And that's actually pretty trivial because all you need to do then is breathe less, put a paper bag over your head, over your mouth, rather, and breathe into the bag back and forth, and that will solve it. So alkaline urine can be very serious in terms of kidney failure or salicylate poisoning, or it can be easily handled, as in hyperventilation. Okay, so this is very important to know. Now, the other thing to know about the pH of the kidney is it's related to stone formation. So if the pH of the urine is acid, then you're going to get uric acid stones, oxalate stones. But if it's too alkaline, then you also get stones. You just get a different kind of stone. So you're looking at calcium carbonate, magnesium phosphate stones. So if the urine is too alkaline, you're going to get stones. If the urine is too acid, you're going to get stones. And, you know, no one's looking forward to stones, I'm sure. Now, urinary pH again, you measure it as soon as the urine comes out. This is an interesting thing. Morning urine should always, always, always be acidic. Why? Because all night long, while you were sleeping, your kidneys and your liver were cleaning your blood. And so they have this whole pile of acid that they've cleaned and scoured out of your blood, and that should be waiting to get pissed out in the morning. So morning urine should always, always be acidic. If it's not acidic, it's alkaline, then what are you doing? Yes, you're right. You got it. You're making stones. And that's no fun. You don't want to do that. Now, also, bacteria tend to thrive in alkaline urine. Imagine that. Imagine that. Now, a diet high in cranberry juice will keep the urine acidic and prevent urinary tract infections. And, you know, they mention here other uses for urinary pH. But I think you got the gist here. The gist is that urinary pH has a range. If you go above that range, it's bad news. And if you go below that range, it can be bad news. But the kidneys like it acidic. So acid urine is a sign of a very well-functioning kidney. All right, let's take a look at the rest of your body here. You've got the kidneys, lungs. So the pH in healthy lungs is between 7.38 and 7.42. It's equal to the pH of the blood that travels through the body. Now, this is because the lungs are just so friggin' bloody. The truth of the matter is, I should say the rest of the story, is as the blood passes through the lungs, acid, instead of becoming H2s laying around, the H2s buddy up with the bicarb and then become a gas, which is carbon dioxide, and moisture, which is water. So when you exhale, you're exhaling water and carbon dioxide. And it's literally pulling all those H pluses out of your blood and changing the blood pH. Now, in healthy lungs, it's 7.38 to 7.42. That difference is how much acid is pulled out of the blood. And you might say not very much, but it's very important, not very much. The way the body works is each organ does a little bit each time the blood goes through it, and the blood goes through that organ, hundreds of times a day, actually. So actually quite a bit. And so blood passing through the lungs, and each time the lungs shaves off, these decimal points of acidity, and by the end of the day, you've dumped a few pounds of acid. So it's a very nice system, and it works. But the bottom line is the pH of the lungs, healthy lungs, is between 7.38 and 7.42. If the pH goes higher than 7.42, what happens? The lungs just basically stop removing acid, right? They stop removing poisons from the blood. Now, I say it removes acids like H+. That's simplifying. It also removes any volatile chemicals or poisons your body does not want. And so when the pH is too high, these things also stay in the blood, in the lungs. Not a pretty picture. Next is your skin. So what's the normal pH of skin? I'm an expert on this one. I wrote the book, right? Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? How to Look 20 Years Younger? Erase Your Wrinkles and Age Bumps. The human skin is seriously acid. That's a pH of 5.5. You raise that pH and it won't be pretty. In other words, you won't look pretty. So the pH of human skin is 5.5. And he said you can even measure it with a piece of litmus paper. And the sweat and the sebum on your skin form an acid mantle. Now, this is all a bunch of gobbledygook, but bottom line is your body literally takes waste products from your blood, dumps it into your skin, dumps these acids into your skin, and these acids also double and function as a protective layer to your skin, keeping your skin protected from the environment, nourishing it, keeping it young-looking and beautiful. So, again, pH of skin, 5.5, if you don't want to have to run from the camera. All right. So what I want you to look at here is the top pH, the highest pH. How alkaline does it get? And this is important. Okay, let's look at feces. Okay, so you eat food in the top and goes through round and round and out the bottom. And so the pH of stool is between 7 and 7.5. Now, again, the body's pH, the body likes a pH of 7.35 to 7.48. So we can see here the feces goes a little bit higher, 7.5. There's a little bit of ability to dump excess alkaline in the feces, a little bit. And let's say 0.2. So 7.48 is normal. If you're up to 7.45 and that 0.2 difference, you can dump in the feces. Let's look on the other end, 7.0. 7.35 is the lower end of acid that your body likes. So the stool is capable of dumping an extra 0.35 pH units in the stool. And so the thing here to understand is the stool is much more capable of dumping acid than it is of dumping excess alkaline. All right. Your stomach, here's the clincher. Here's where the rubber meets the road. The normal pH of your stomach is a pH of 1.5 to 3.5. That's pretty acid. That's very powerful acid. That's almost like industrial strength acid. And this is huge. So what does that mean? That means if the pH in your stomach goes over 3.5, then you can't digest your food. Exactly. Acidify to live. You need an acid stomach. If you don't have an acid stomach, then the food that you eat cannot inure to your benefit. In other words, it can't nourish you, keep you alive, help you grow and stay healthy. So this is critical, that the stomach pH is 1.5 to 3.5, but the blood pH is 7.35 to 7.48. There's a puzzle that needs to be solved. So we've got a lot of acid in the stomach. Normal to have acid in the stomach. If you don't have acid in the stomach, it's not good. Now, what about the bile? Now, we're looking for something that's alkaline, right? Because alkalinize or die. That's what we say, alkalinize or die. So we're looking for alkaline. So the presence of bile in the stomach. Okay, so what's the bile? The bile pH is, it's variable, but it can be tend towards acid. So like 6.5 to 7.5, it's a range. The liver pH, though, is 7.4. It doesn't really have a range. It's firmly 7.4. So what the liver does is, liver is very interesting. The liver has the ability to create acid, and it has the ability to create alkaline. It can go either way. And because of this special feature, it allows the liver to, the liver can manufacture alkaline for the purpose of neutralizing acid. And then what does it do? It dumps this acid into the bile, which goes into the intestines and out into the toilet. And so the liver, the only organ that can do this, can create what's called fixed acid. That's what it does, makes fixed acid. And the same with alkaline. And because it can go either way, it is one of the ultimate balancers in the body. If you'll recall, all the other organs I mentioned can pretty much only adjust the pH in one direction. In other words, it can get rid of acid. And so that is, so liver, as always, you know, saves the day. All right, so now I've got a gist of the pH ranges in the body, what the pH is, and where it is. So now I want to tell you the medical story. This is not a medical story. It's actually true. It's history. It really happened. What happened was way back when, and I went to medical school back in the late 70s, that'd be 79 to 83. And so what happened was people had something called indigestion. And it was the medical community's opinion or belief, we'll call it a belief, that this happened because of acid. And so what we did, we gave people something called antacids. That would be something like maybe Maalox or something. And what we would do is we would lower their acid. This gave people relief of their symptoms. However, their overall progress with their acid-type symptoms, indigestion we'll call it, or GERD, gastroesophageal reflux, was later called, was it over time got worse and worse and worse. Then, this was really about the 50s and 60s, and then in the 70s or so, they developed something called Zantac. It's H2 blocker, and this partially blocks the stomach's ability to make acid and, of course, alkalinizing or raising the pH of the stomach. Well, I tell you, when I got to medical school and they had, cimetidine, among other things, drugs available in this class, we felt so powerful. We felt like we could really help our patients now. Just give them this pill, by golly, and their indigestion symptoms would just go away. And they did. Their indigestion symptoms would go away for maybe a few weeks, and then they would come back even worse. Well, then, just as I was on my way out of medical school, reaching for my diploma, the proton pump inhibitors hit the scene. This would be 83, 84. And the proton pump inhibitors are the little purple pill. And what the proton pump inhibitors do is they totally shut down all acid production. Boom, done. And they've actually done studies, and this is a .gov website, and see anything at NIH.gov, got to be true. This is from the National Library of Medicine. And so they did a study on the inhibition of gastric hydrochloric acid secretions, and what they found was this. After you gave the proton pump inhibitor, the average pH in the stomach went as high, went from 7.1 to 8.2. This is in the stomach, 8.2. And as these proton pump inhibitors were being approved, it was like, these are new miracle drugs. We have to put them on the market because people are suffering so. And by the way, when rats take them for 8 weeks, the rats get cancer. What? What? Why are we doing animal studies? Why are we torturing all these rats if we're not going to use the results of these studies to keep drugs off the market that might cause the same effects experienced by the animals? But, hey, nobody asked me, right? Yeah, so. This is really shocking. So we now have a pH in the stomach between 6.1 to 8.2. That's the range, 90% confidence interval. And the baseline was anywhere from 1.5 to 5. I don't know who had a pH of size 5, but whatever. So substantial increase in pH. So what has this got to do with the price of peas in China? Well, the research did not stop there. What they then did was they took some rats and they did some research trying to figure out if and how the pH in the stomach had anything at all to do with parasites. And this was done by Eiler, Baber, Like, and Schottlands, and this can be found at the National Library of Medicine.gov website, PubMed. And what did they say? The immersion of freshly collected adult worms was put into a 0.9% saline solution, and with a pH of 1. What they found was there's 100% mortality of the worms within a 10-minute period. At a pH of 7, the pH was 58%, the mortality was 58%. In other words, 42% of the worms were still alive after 270 minutes. So if you're weak on the math, that would be 4.5 hours. Yep. And so this is interesting. So at a pH of 2.2, which approximates the usual abdominal pH, there was 100% mortality of these worms within 60 minutes. You guys see where this is going. They did this on rats, of course. In the stomach of the rats, if you raise this pH, then what do you get? You get increased survival of these parasites. And so these effects were similar to those found in the stomach of rats treated with cimetidine. The results indicate that the pH 2.2 was detrimental to survival of parasites, and that low acid, well, they drew this conclusion, which I think is totally unfounded, is that low acid found during these parasites' existence may be mediated partially by a chemical release from the parasite. Duh. You gave the person an antacid. You gave them an H2 blocker to block the release of acid. So could it be that alkalinizing the stomach makes it a free pass for parasites? Of course, the answer is absolutely. And if you raise that pH in the stomach to 7, oh, man, that's like a blank check. That's like giving the parasites a blank check. So they overrun the whole friggin' place. And so this is a problem. Now, what has happened in people who have had their stomachs alkalinized by proton pump inhibitors? This made the front page of the Wall Street Journal, I want you to know. You can learn a lot of medicine reading the Wall Street Journal. Well, before it was bought by its present owner, I haven't read it recently, so I can't say. But this is many, many years ago. So what happened was there was a sevenfold increase in esophageal cancer, which was associated with the use of proton pump inhibitors and alkalinizing the esophagus with these drugs. Yes, everybody. That's what was found. So what does this mean for human beings? Well, what it means for human beings is that if you alkalinize your stomach, you will die. You do need to keep your blood in the alkaline range, and there's an absolute value. Alkaline is defined. This is on a totally chemical basis, having nothing to do with life. Alkaline is more than 7. Acidic is less than 7, period. Arbitrary scientific definition, and we're going to accept it as truth. That's it. So you need to keep your blood in the alkaline range, which is between 7 and 7.48, preferably 7.35 and 7.48. That is the optimum pH level at which you will experience excellent healing and resolution of whatever illness may befall you. Should your pH, however, rise above 7.48, as we used to say in medicine, heaven help you because no one else can. So, in other words, your immune system is designed to operate at a pH no higher than 7.48. So any alkalinizing efforts that result in a pH higher than that is not to your benefit. So, let's take a look at what I think about alkalinizing. I think that what makes sense in terms of alkalinizing is to alkalinize using things like leafy greens, trace minerals. All of these things basically pass through the stomach and transmit their alkalinity to the blood. And with leafy greens, the degree of alkalinity, is moderated by the fact that it is a life form, and leafy greens can't really exist at a pH much different from 7.48 anyway. So, yes, you're going to get some reduction in acid, but what you're going to get is you're not going to disturb that pH of 1.5 to 3.5 that your stomach needs, and you're going to be able to get this nutrition into the blood where it can keep the blood alkaline. and that's really what you're after. You're after an alkaline blood of greater than 7, specifically 7.35 to 7.48, and you're after an acidic stomach, pH of 1.5 to 3.5. So the stomach is 1.5 to 3.5. How do you end up with a pH of 7 at the bottom of the line when you have feces? Well, your intestines are not simply passive tubes. So what happens is the acid in the stomach helps digest and break down your food so that it can be absorbed and metabolized. When that process happens, that acid in the stomach moves down through the small intestine where absorption takes place. And when it gets to the large intestine, that acid is reabsorbed into the blood, circulated back to the stomach where it is recycled, leaving at the bottom end of the line feces with a pH in the area of 7.0 to 7.50. So this is the way the body is designed to work. And then you've got the health nuts that come along. Sell a lot of books, a lot of water alkalinizers, a few other things, you know, harmless enough, I guess. And they tell people, alkalinize or die. They tell people, add more alkaline to the system. Yeah, drink some alkaline water, pH of 8. What does the alkaline water pH of 8 do? Yeah, you figured it out. It raises the pH of that stomach from 1.5 around about 7. And pH of 8 for alkaline water, though, is a pretty low pH. Many people drink alkaline water at a pH of 9 or even work up to 9.5 or 10. And what this does long-term is it totally destroys the digestive power and digestive ability of the stomach. And I actually have clients who started working with me because they can't digest anything. Nothing works anymore. Of course, the solution is to pour some acid down there. And acid can take many forms. Vitamin C is one form of acid you can pour in there. You can actually use HCl, hydrogen chloride drops. But acid is what the stomach needs. And it's the acid that destroys the parasites in the stomach so that they don't get to the rest of your body. And so with the acid in the stomach, what then happens is you protect the rest of your organs from the devastating effect of parasites. And it's these parasites, whether it's worms or viruses or bacteria or candida, that tear down your immune system, suck up your nutrients, and really just drain the life out of you. And so it's very, very important to have an acid pH in the stomach, at the same time an alkaline pH in the blood. And what's the way to do this? Tried and true diet. You know, not any shortcuts. Now, some people talk about baking soda, taking a teaspoon of baking soda every day. Taking baking soda is something that can be very beneficial, especially when you're in a crisis. Maybe you're asthmatic and you realize, oh, my God, I can't breathe. You know, take a teaspoon of baking soda, put it in water, stir it up, drink it down. Sure, you'll be able to breathe quickly. But to do baking soda every single day, twice a day, again, you're looking at raising the pH in the stomach to higher than 3.5, in which case you're really working against yourself because now you've created a parasite highway. And these parasites are penetrating often right through the very lining of your stomach and just crawling right into your blood. And so your body really depends on this highly acid environment in the stomach to keep things from getting out of hand. So I'm going to stop it and answer a couple of questions because people are really concerned about this topic. Oh, by the way, people, if you have questions, you're listening on the telephone, you just click your button there and I'll recognize you and answer some questions. Okay. All right, so let's take a look. Uh-oh. Move this up here. All right, so the question is, what about cancer? What about cancer not being able to survive in an alkaline environment? That's there's a couple of things to take a look at. One is creating the cancer, and two, the cancer surviving. All right. So the truth of the matter is you can't create cancer if you have a nice acid environment in your stomach. So that's what's going on, is you need the acid environment in your stomach to prevent you from getting the cancer in the first place. That's number one. Next thing is once the cancer gets into your system, once it becomes established, then it creates an internal acid environment inside, I guess you can call it the cancer ball. And so the challenge then is to dissolve that cancer at the same time neutralizing the acid that it releases at the same rate that it releases the acid. So it turns out that if you're taking a proton pump inhibitor and creating an alkaline environment in your stomach, then you're feeding the cancer. Okay, so someone mentioned maple syrup and baking soda. Again, maple syrup acid, baking soda alkaline, together you've got something that's not going to lower the pH nearly as much as baking soda alone. So that's important. And someone's asked, what about inhaling hydrogen peroxide? Hydrogen peroxide is obviously alkaline. So what happens, this is important, when you inhale hydrogen peroxide, it sits right there on the membrane of the lungs as you inhale it, and it neutralizes the acid right there on the spot. So what happens is this hydrogen peroxide you're inhaling is not in your blood. It is in the air sacs of your lungs that you're inhaling, and it's neutralizing this acid that your body is trying to get rid of. And so, yes, then that would work. Is female urine more acidic than male? I don't know. I would not really see why that would be the case. All right, so we have a joke here in the chat room. Cancer moves in like a new wife, starts changing everything to her liking. Then when she gets comfortable, the host dies. So that is one way of thinking about it. So it's really important. Okay, so someone asked. Now, another thing, too, when we talk about alkalinizing, the real problem is we talk about it as if alkalinizing, as if the body just wants a bunch of hydrogen atoms or a bunch of hydroxide ions, rather, whether H-plus ions or H-minus ions, and that's not true. What your body wants is it really wants these trace minerals, which happen to be alkaline, and it's these trace minerals that supercharge your immune system and really get it to heal tremendously. So what your body is looking for is not just a bunch of negative ions to neutralize the positive acid, because as you can see, every organ you own is devoted to getting rid of acid. Your kidneys dump acid, your skin dumps acid, your lungs dump acid, your intestines even dump acid. So it's all geared towards dumping acid. Why is it geared towards dumping acid? Because a normal healthy body manufactures acid as part of the energy production metabolism process. That's the way it is. And chemical reactions in the body, chemical reactions necessary to your healing, occur between the pH of 7.35 and 7.48. So if you're an alkalinized or dye type person, then what would make sense would be to check the pH of your blood and see if it is a little bit low. If it is low, that low is less than 7.35, then sure, definitely you need to alkalinize. What would be the best way to alkalinize? I would say trace minerals, leafy greens, and alkaline food. But alkaline water, no. Why? Because your body's not looking for a bunch of negative OH ions. Your body's looking for those trace minerals. Your body's looking for the nutrients that it needs to create the compounds necessary to heal you. That's what your body's looking for. So your body's not looking for a particular level of H plus ions or a particular level of H minus ions. What your body's really looking for is the nutrition that it needs to get the job done. And when it doesn't have this nutrition it needs to get the job done, your health suffers. And that's really the bottom line. And so to take a shortcut by drinking alkaline water or drinking sodium bicarb, sipping on it all day long, doesn't work. It doesn't work. Why? Because the stomach needs to be acid. And so your challenge then is to create an acid stomach, pH of 1.5 to 3.5, and an alkaline blood, pH between 7.35 and 7.48. Over 7.48, it is not only not beneficial for you, it's actually harmful to you. And you can unwittingly, just literally, destroy and dismantle your immune system. So the other question then, the question then becomes, well, how do you keep this intense acidity going in your stomach yet have the alkaline environment on the other end? And the answer is that you realize you need the acid in your stomach and you put it there. You put it there with acidic water, which would be distilled water, pH 5.5. You put it there with vitamin C powder, which is an acid. And when you eat your food, you want to eat what's called a balanced diet. No, you don't want white flour with your fruit. But not all foods are alkaline. There are many foods that are acidic, extremely healthy ones too, I'll tell you. Rice bran, very acidic, extremely healthy, extremely nutritious. Fruit, extremely acidic. Now, I'm not a fruit fan, but I found that one or two pieces a day of fruit is better than no fruit at all. People actually heal a lot quicker and a lot better with two pieces of fruit. Very interesting. Beans, definitely acidic. But guess what? Very healthy, very nutritious. Grains like brown rice, quinoa, amaranth, all these things are acidic. So when you eat these foods that are healthy and acidic, you maintain the acidity in your stomach and you maintain your health. What about alkaline? Alkaline, no problem. All your vegetables pretty much are alkaline except the beans and grains. So things like the green leafy vegetables, the string beans, the carrots, onions, garlic, celery, all these things are alkaline. And so what you really need is you need to put into your body a diet with a net pH somewhere in the area of 7 to 7.5. That's what you need to do. Now, how does this work? Why does this work? Well, your body has the ability to take water and combine it with oxygen. And when that happens, you basically have the net effect of taking the water molecule and splitting it into two pieces. One piece is H+, that's acid. The other piece is OH, that's alkaline. The acid piece stays in your stomach to digest your food. The OH piece goes into your blood. It keeps your blood alkaline. And that's how that balance is maintained. And so when you dump a bunch of alkaline into your system, your body can't maintain that balance. It then slides over to being too alkaline, and then there you have it. Things are not going well. So if people have any questions, they can click their button here. Wait, we have a question here. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Daniel.
Hi. I recognize this voice.
Yes, this is Yvonne. I just want to say your show is really great. I really enjoy it. I've learned a lot. But did you say vitamin C powder? I didn't quite understand what. Did you say something about vitamin C?
I use vitamin C. Yeah, vitamin C. You just mix it, stir it with water, and just drink it down the hatch. Some people are sensitive. When I say sensitive, they can't take a high concentration of it. So they would maybe take a teaspoon of vitamin C powder in a liter of water and then just sip it as they're able to.
Okay, and you said a teaspoon of baking soda and water once, twice a day?
No. I wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't recommend it, but some people who are on cancer protocols are taking it that way. So what I'm trying to stress is that's an episodic dumping of alkaline into the stomach, and often the stomach can recover from it. But if you continue to do it steadily, it stresses your system and pushes your pH off the other end. So if you're going to manipulate your pH by dumping alkaline into your system, it's a good idea to check your pH.
The other thing is, what about fermented food? Is that
my
good
favorite
for
stuff.
Is it really
fermented food
really
is very good because fermented food has enzymes that help your digestion. And what the fermented foods allow is they allow your body to get a lot more work done with a lot less effort. Now, people say fermented foods, and I think that's too general. My favorite is sauerkraut juice. You can ferment a lot of things. And what I found is that the biggest return for your effort is with sticking to the tried and true sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut, okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, we have another question here.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Yes.
Yes, I have a question about cesium and potassium protocol for cancer. Is that too alkaline?
I'm not really familiar with that particular protocol enough to comment on that. Again, I think that when you're messing with the pH, you just need to understand what pH each one of your organs in your body needs. And the bottom line is to go ahead and measure the blood pH. Take a drop of blood, you know, prick your finger, take a drop of blood, put it on a pH paper and see what color you get and see what the pH is. If you're outside of 7.48, then you've overdone it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
all
important
right, now,
to do.
It'll still, because so the cesium can actually alkalinize the stomach, like you're saying, just like the baking soda.
The cesium can, potassium can, a lot of minerals can. And so most people who have cancer have what I would call a global state of malnutrition. In other words, cesium is not the only mineral they're missing. So, again, you need to check the pH and make sure you don't go outside the bounds of a healthy pH range.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Let's see here. Okay. Let's see if we have any more questions here in our chat room. Dr. Daniels, do you ferment vegetables? Yes, I do. I ferment cabbage. Cabbage is such a boring color, though, that I grate some carrots in there just so it looks pretty. Okay. What about checking your pH with saliva? Of course, checking the saliva with pH sticks. That's a reasonable thing to do. And, again, you need to check what the normal pH range is for saliva. And then that's your benchmark, because saliva pH is normally acidic, has to be acidic. Why does that have to be acidic? The saliva pH is acidic, and that is a good thing because the digestion begins in the mouth with the saliva beginning to break down your food, and that's not going to happen at an alkaline pH. So, yes, you can check your saliva pH. But your interpretation of it has to be tempered by what you know to be the normal saliva range. So in other words, you'd want to have saliva results that are in the high end of the normal saliva pH range. Because if your saliva pH is more alkaline than the normal saliva is range is, then what you're doing is you're over-alkalinizing your body and you're actually compromising your immune system. Let me see if I can find the normal range for saliva. Okay, muscle, kidneys, lungs, skin, feces, stomach, liver. I even have eyeball saliva, 6.5 to 7.6. And I don't see the saliva pH range. But you can Google the saliva pH range and see what that pH range is. And the key concept here is whatever body fluid you're measuring the pH of, it has a different normal range. You want to be in the normal range, but toward the alkaline end of that normal range. And so, for example, the skin pH is anywhere between 4 and 5.5. So if you're measuring your pH and how are you doing, to have a skin pH higher than 5.5 might suggest that your blood pH is outside of its proper pH range as well. Somebody wants to know what a pH stick is. A finger stick. There are so many diabetics at the moment right now that you can just ask if somebody in your family has got a device for sticking the finger and getting a drop of blood. And so you can just borrow that from your neighbor or from a friend and use that. So once you get that drop of blood, you put it on some litmus paper or pH test paper, and you can buy these pH test things on the from your local pharmacy. They're just available really everywhere, ubiquitous. And so when you want the paper, it's going to change color, and then you just line the paper up to the chart that comes with it, and that will tell you the pH. So it's very easy to do. And I'm looking here on the Internet, and there's no fewer than 50 different types of papers. So you can just go to your local pharmacy and say, hey, I want pH paper or pH measuring paper. We used to have a fancy name for it years ago, but I guess it's fallen into everyday use here. So that's what you do. You just go to the drugstore, buy some pH paper, and it'll come with a pH chart, borrow a finger stick thing from one of your diabetic friends, everyone's got one, and just put a drop of blood on it, and you'll see exactly what the pH is. You can do the same thing with saliva, with urine, and so you can measure your pH very easily. Let's take a look over here. Okay, great. So next week's topic is Ebola and other things that go bump in the night. Absolutely. So next week we're going to talk about this Ebola outbreak. What is it? What's going on? Who's infected? How do we know? What's the treatment? And why are these healthcare workers dying? And that's going to be really exciting. I think people need to really tune in for that because understanding the Ebola epidemic allows you to not only protect yourself, but you can use it as a model for so many other things in terms of your approach to your own health care, and you can use that to keep yourself safe. As always, visit me at vitalitycapsules.com. This Vitality Capsule sale is ending in a couple of days. If people would like one-on-one information, counseling about their concerns, they can click the discovery session and not only get some clarification on what's going on, but a game plan moving forward. So it's really, really exciting. And that is it for tonight. And we'll see you back next week.